This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. 20 years ago this Wednesday, the world experienced the worst nuclear accident in its history. In the early morning hours of April 26th, an inexperienced technician at the Chernobyl power plant was running an experiment for a safety test, an experiment that triggered an explosion in one of the reactors. Over the next 10 days, radiation, equivalent by some estimates to as much as 100 Hiroshimas, spewed into the atmosphere. The human toll is far less clear. In the immediate aftermath, casualty figures ranged from 2 people, as reported by Soviet media after a 3-day blackout on any information, to 2,000 people, as reported by an American wire service. A UN group has estimated that radiation will ultimately kill some 4,000 people. But this week, a new Greenpeace report concluded it would be more like 93,000. It's a reminder of all that still remains murky about the disaster, including the physical state of the concrete and steel barrier built to seal in the reactor in the days following the accident. In 1987, longtime CBS Moscow correspondent Jonathan Sanders analyzed the initial media coverage in an article called Comrade X Was Wrong. The title referred to a 1940 Clark Gable film about a cynical American reporter in Moscow who went by the alias Comrade X.
Honestly, you make me sick. 2 years ago, I looked up to you as the best reporter in the business, and now look at you.
Face the facts, baby. There ain't no news in Russia.
Ain't no news in Russia. I guess that was the nub of the problem when Chernobyl occurred.
That's right. The Russian news media was an organ of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, so it did what the master said. In 1986, the media was beginning to open up. Gorbachev had done a great deal of talking about glasnost, which means openness or candor, but it was just creaking the door open a crack.
Okay, now this wasn't some sort of Politburo purge or a failed wheat crop. A nuclear catastrophe couldn't be contained within Soviet borders, and I guess neither could the reporting of it. How did the story break, and how were Soviet citizens first informed?
The news came out when a radioactive cloud started drifting over Sweden, and the men in charge of information to foreign journalists in Moscow started saying, it must be a nuclear leak in Sweden. 72 hours, nothing was heard. And then finally, on the evening news, the equivalent of CBS, ABC, and NBC all rolled into one, there was a 6-sentence announcement.
На Чернобыльской атомной электростанции произошла авария. Поврежден один из атомных реакторов.
An accident has taken place at the Chernobyl Atomic Energy Station. One of the atomic reactors has been damaged. Measures are being taken to eliminate the consequences of the accident. Help is being given to the victims. A government commission has been established. That was all. But that was a big all because in their media system, people learn to read between the lines. And for smart people, that was a monstrous declaration because they never announced accidents. Accidents happened somewhere else. They happened abroad. Bad things didn't happen at home.
For the Western media, I guess there were 2 stories going on. One was about the accident itself, and the other about the Soviet reaction to it and how the moral bankruptcy of Soviet communism was revealing itself and so forth. Did that storyline in the Western press ever veer into gloating or jingoism or propaganda of its own?
Jingoism and propaganda in the American media? Bob, that would never happen. Saying we're better than you at the time that Ronald Reagan was calling them an evil empire? How could you say that? Of course it did. Part of it was our fearful reaction against Soviet technology. There was a great gotcha element to the political reporters who were covering Gorbachev. Gorbachev, you're talking about openness and candor, and suddenly there are all these lies coming out. How can we trust you? We're talking about arms control talks, and you're lying to the people about atomic energy. There was a great deal of this moralizing. And to this day, if you talk to Gorbachev about it, he says that enemies in the West exaggerated what was going on and took this out of the harsh anti-Soviet Reagan administration playbook to ridicule and to point a finger at Russia.
And in fact, it was a gotcha moment, I suppose, and one that must have been most revealing indeed for Soviet citizens themselves. Now, what about the practice of journalism? Was there a sea change there? Did journalism cease to become propaganda all the time and actually mutate into something more genuine?
Chernobyl is like that expression, put the pedal to the metal, for journalists who wanted change. They wanted to cover the consequences of their own war in Afghanistan, much in the way they saw the better American journalists who covered the war in Vietnam. And Chernobyl is one of the things that many people think of as a significant turning point, not only in the media change in Russia, which has swung like a big pendulum on a big grandfather's clock back and forth and back and forth, and we may be back to where it was when Chernobyl exploded, but to the larger political context in which the Soviet Union collapsed. In those early years after the Soviet Union fell apart, you might say that what was then became Russian journalism was freer, had more possibilities to do different and frank and critical-minded things than any media system, including our own.
Well, it's 20 years later, and there is a democratically elected president in Russia, Putin. And it seems to me that the Russian media, occasionally at least, in the face of national disaster, behaves ever more like Soviet media, with the submarine disaster and the Beslan siege, even where it was unclear for many hours, even days, what was taking place there.
Well, I think on the massest of mass media, Putin has returned to, you know, Gunsmoke, the marshals in town, the marshal keeps order. Television has the same kind of saintly image of the leader. Now it's Putin, then it was Gorbachev, or before him, Chernenko. Accidents don't get reported. But the people in charge of the Russian media system, while they've cracked down tremendously, while they've reharnessed the television industry on a national level, they realize that they don't want to return to the days of people standing handing out underground self-published newspapers on the corners, with the exception of things coming out of the terrorist camps in Chechnya. So far, there has not been the censorship we've seen in China. And in part, this is policy wisdom. They don't want to turn the country into a pressure cooker. They want it to be a tea kettle in which some steam can escape and sound a warning knell. But it's, you know, one of my friends got her teeth kicked in a couple weeks ago because she had been responsible for putting out some very unvarnished, raw information about what was going on in the investigation or non-investigation of the Beslan School massacre. So, you know, bad days are here again is part of the song. And as they get ready for there to be another presidential election in a couple years, I think you're going to see even more crackdowns, even more restrictions, even more of a straitjacket thrown on the Russian media.
Jonathan Sanders served as CBS's Moscow correspondent from 1988 to 1997. He produced the film 3 Days in September about the Beslan school siege. It will premiere at the Tribeca Film Festival on May Day. Jonathan, thank you very much.
My pleasure, Bob. I wish it was a better story.